Okay, this is the hour that you've been waiting for. Phone calls, your calls with Dr. Melvin Morris. Near-death experiences, remote viewing, consciousness in the brain. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. How did you get involved in pediatrics, Melvin? How did you get pushed in that area?
Well, I always wanted to know how the human brain worked. So I initially wanted to be a neurosurgeon. And I was just, you know, I loved that idea. Yeah. Of being able to, to reach into the human brain, and to remove areas of the brain, and see what stops working, which is, the way, let's face it, 50 years ago in the bad old days was how they learned how the brain did work. But neurosurgery is, it's an extremely technical, demanding, I love the philosophy of it, but, the technical aspects of it, I decided to go into pediatrics because I love that concept of the developing brain and, learning how the brain goes from nothing to then, the fully formed conscious adults that we are. To me, that was a fascinating process.
I had a story earlier, a neurosurgeon in Australia. Listen to this one. A little kid, not wearing his bicycle helmet, crashes, bumps his head. He comes home and he tells his mother, I've got headaches. She's a nurse. She takes him to the hospital. The neurosurgeon on duty realizes the kid's bleeding from within, right? He's hemorrhaging. So he's in a small hospital in Australia. They don't have any equipment. He borrows from the maintenance guy a power drill, drills in the kid's head, gets the blood clot out, and then they take him to a children's hospital about an hour later, and the kid's okay. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, George, I've done that in the emergency room setting. And when we work for airlift, when we fly into these remote areas, not a power drill. We've used, I'd be afraid to use a power drill, but we've used a hand drill.
How do you know how deep to go?
Yeah, or to avoid that whoops phenomena. That's why they have, you know what I mean? Where, whoop.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't whoop if you're working on me.
Yeah. That's why, so we sort of, makeshift, jury rigged, a sort of a whoops protector. But I mean, that's why, the real stuff has, that kind of stuff built into it.
When you cut the skull and you take a piece out, can you put it back and does it grow back to the skull or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does grow back.
Yeah. Okay. And the brain feels no pain. Is that wild or what?
I did not know that.
Yeah, we sense pain, but, with our brains. But the brain itself, that's how all the old-time neurosurgeons, they would do stuff. Like, they'd remove the top of somebody's skull, and then they'd take these stainless steel probes, and they would probe one area of the brain, and the person would move their arm, and they'd probe another area of the brain, and they'd move their leg, and that's how they mapped out the brain in the bad old days.
Now, if you were drilling into the skull, you'd feel that, right?
Well, you're going to feel right. You're going to feel, because scalp has
nerves.
Nerves. But the brain tissue itself does not. So that's, these neurosurgical patients are frequently awake during the procedure. That, they just use local anesthesia. Frankly, that's how we know a lot about these psychical phenomena. Because when Wilder Penfield, 50, 60 years ago, when he probed areas of the brain, patients would say things like, "Oh, God, I'm leaving my body." Or they'd say, "I'm half in" or "I'm half out."
That is fascinating.
So there's a lot of science to that. I was once on National Public Radio and I was debating one of these, skeptical inquirer type of people, and he ended up calling Wilder Penfield a pseudoscientist because he just was unaware.
Pseudoscientist.
Kind of research had been done. But they've been able to map out, premonitions, and there's a whole area of the brain that's dedicated to having it. Well, George, why would we have a whole area of our brain dedicated to having psychical and out-of-body experiences unless these experiences were real? I mean, you wouldn't have a TV set in your house, you know, broadcasting information, you know, from an invisible, you know.
That's true.
You know, I mean, unless it, you know, it's not just sort of randomly creating a visual image, you know, you're getting some real information from it.
Good point. To the phones we go. We'll go east of the Rockies, Joe in Overland Park, Kansas. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Morris. I'm a big fan since 2004. Had a couple of things to say and one question. One thing I notice, I seem to be able to access when I'm falling asleep or just waking up what I call the kind of the palate of the mind, which is like a storm of information. And I'm not really awake. I'm still kind of asleep, and it's really interesting. But my question was, does being deeply in love affect the ability to access this information, kind of remote viewing, or could we call it like a co-location of consciousness, perhaps?
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, real quick, because I want everybody to have a chance, but I got to comment on the first thing you said. What you're describing is called the hypnagogic state,
yes.
The state between awake and sleep. And it's during that state that you can access non-local perception. And I'm just blown away that you can actually access the entire matrix.
Just about.
And the last person that told me this is actually a research scientist, and he's a plant biologist. He used to run his own a plant biology company, and he was unaware that he was able to do this. And he's a skeptical scientist type, and it turns out he's one of the most gifted psychics that I've ever seen. He's able to bend spoons, and he remote viewed protozoa coming to this planet and stuff like that, and he can do that same thing. And so now the second question, there's just tons of research showing that psychical abilities are enhanced fourfold by having a strong psychic bond with, you know, somebody that you love. That's why my wife and I remote view together.
I would like to know more about that doctor. I've been taking notes on this for years. I journal, and when I wake up and it's still there, I'm scribbling notes. And I would like to be able to get a hold of you somehow. I don't know.
Wait, you can email me at spiritualscientific.com. But man, you're getting the raw data from the matrix. I'd be writing all that stuff down.
You know,
people like Robert Louis Stevenson wrote some of their greatest novels, and for people that are skeptical, George, I'm so sick of the skeptics. I can't tell you, but. I interviewed Jonas Salk about 12 years ago.
That must have been thrilling to do that.
Yeah, it was absolutely thrilling, especially the part where he casually says that aliens gave him the information for the Salk vaccine
what?
In the exact state that our caller was just talking about.
Oh, you've got to explain this one.
He states that when he was in that drowsy, half-awake, half-asleep state, that information flooded into him having to do with the Salk vaccine. And then it's his own analytic overlay that, you know, that he says it was aliens. I mean, just like when children have near-death experiences, one person says, you know, that it was, you know, their dog, and another person says it was their lamb, and another person says, you know, it was a man. And one girl said to me, she said it was a doctor, and he was 14 feet tall, and he had a light bulb in his body. You know, so everybody has a different description of what this thing is, but Jonas Salk said
amazing.
I was there with science writer Paul Perry, and I mean, we're just like, I mean, just casually, oh yeah.
You know, he was an incredible guy too. When he developed his polio vaccine, he decided he did not want to patent it, and he said he had no desire to profit personally from the discovery.
Yeah,
you know what? They're not made that way anymore,
yeah,
are they?
That's absolutely true about Jonas Salk. And it's just, you know, but remember, he had to take his spiritual insight to the laboratory. He had to take it, you know, and do the hard work of developing it. And that's the problem that I have with the metaphysical and spiritual movement today. is that they're just content to say, wow, my teacher can make the rain come. And then if I say to them, well, how does he do it? They think I'm some skeptical guy saying he can't do it. They don't understand. I'm saying, wait a minute, I want to really know how he does it. Okay, let's break it apart. Let's figure it out. We're not going to make it disappear just because we study it. We're going to learn more about it. Anyway, caller, yeah, that's those are two great questions. You can email me at it's spiritualscientific.com.
Let's go to Palm Beach, Florida. First time caller. Go ahead, Dick. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I can't believe I'm talking to you, Judge. I listened to you for years and years.
Well, thanks.
I listened to a guy about a month ago by the name of Melvin Thomas Benedict. And this man had a near-death experience where he died and came back an hour and a half later. And I downloaded the information that he sent, about 8 pages, and I showed it to a friend of mine that's very, very into all this stuff. And he got on and analyzed every paragraph, and he said to me, I've done this. I know what's going on. The man is absolutely right on everything he said. But this guy Benedict had to die. My friend can do this. He's very psychic. He's an indigo child, if you know what that means. He's very up to date, and he can do this anytime he wants. But he says he's got to stop his breathing, and he's got to stop his heart. He's got to be very still, and he can project or do anything. And what he does now to help people is that if you have any kind of a disease or a problem, he takes your name that you're born with, your birthday, and he goes into this meditation where he has to be very, very still. His heart stops beating, and he can tune in to the universe and pull up any information you want. He does this to me all the time. He tells me how my heart's doing, how many parasites. What he works on mainly is he says parasites are the biggest enemy mankind. It kills more people than all the wars put together. There are 300 different types of parasites. They cause 130 diseases in our body. If you get rid of the parasites, you don't have this problem. And also, he says that you got to get rid of the mercury in your mouth. The dentists, they put mercury, they put root canals, they put wire in your mouth. All this destroys your immune system. He says the dentists are murdering people, and they're getting away with it because any metal, any mercury, anything in your mouth destroys your immune system. You're only as strong as your immune system. But this man is just incredible that he can do that. He knows everything about it, anything. You can ask him any question you want, how the world began 85 billion years ago, all about the churches, religion.
You've got to, Dick, you've got to get this guy on the program. I'd love to interview him for a little bit.
He's about 80 years old, but he's very, very talented.
I got to interrupt you and just tell you something. Okay, 20% of your brain is dedicated towards your having the experience of total knowledge. When you die, when children die, they tell me, they say, everything that ever was and everything that was, it was in my brain. My brain exploded with the fireworks of knowledge. You have the ability to access information. And we have to learn how to stop looking to other people to tell us the secrets and mysteries of life and start using your own right temporal lobe to start understanding your own spiritual truths. We've got to move to that stage. We got to get out of this stage of these gifted spiritual people and realize that any of us are gifted as well.
That we can do the same thing.
Absolutely, George. I'm teaching engineers. I'm teaching, like I was telling you this, plant biologists, and they're doing it. It's just, the only objection I have, I think it's great to know that somebody can access any information for us. But then that puts it in the realm of something we can't do.
True.
And that doesn't move us towards a new paradigm of understanding we can all do this and we're all interconnected.
You were just mentioning you work with some plant biologists. What do you think of the studies and experiments of people like Clive Baxter where they pick up the actual stimulus of a plant when it senses fear and danger? Isn't that incredible?
Sure. That kind of research. Well, you know, Clive Baxter is very, you know, he's from the scientific mainstream.
Yes, right?
I'm glad to hear what you said, because those same studies have been done in human beings, in which, Dean Radin down at the University of Las Vegas in Nevada, when he was there, he showed that college students could reliably anticipate seeing a horrible picture or seeing, a picture of a car crash. And he used the same technology that Clive Baxter used on plants. The same kind of, monitoring the physiology of their body and their heart rate, et cetera. Okay, why is this important? This is one of the tiny studies that I'm talking about, because those same college students, if you ask them, hey, is a horrible picture going to come? They say, I don't know. And yet their body does know. he's able to show they have changes in heart rate. Well, so that means, for example, my friend who was driving along Silicon Valley one day, and he suddenly had a feeling of dread, and his hands got clammy, and he suddenly felt himself slammed to the other side of the car just as a sniper's bullet came through the windshield of his car. We start to understand how scientifically that could happen. And there's a direct line of understanding from a scientific standpoint from Baxter's research on plants to Dean Radin's research to then understanding why people can avoid terrible events when they sense that feeling of dread.
All right, well done. Let's go to Wichita, Kansas. William, take it away.
Hi, George. Hi. You told me I should write a book, and I love your show. I don't know if you remember me, but...
I do.
How's it going? Well, I have a real quick comment and a question for you guys. I remember calling a little while ago, about a month ago, telling you about my past life experience as when I was, as furthest memory I had, where I was in a white room and there were two people dressed in Greek togas. Well, I had other ones like that of when I was small and my parents can't remember, no, we've never been to Africa, and I don't know what you're talking about, that white room. So my question is really, how do you both feel about the transition stage and coming into this world versus your past life and this life, but the transition stage, that limbo sort of world in which we pass
okay.
through. So,
let's try to grab it, because we've only got a minute left before the break, Melvin.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's just the opposite of the near-death experience. People that have studied that transition phase, particularly in children, there's a woman in the Netherlands that's done this, and children who remember past lives, they describe coming down through that tunnel and then reattaching, re-entering into some sort of physical body. And they say it's just another sort of circumstantial piece of evidence that the near-death experience is a real experience.
Absolutely. And that major website that you mentioned, spiritualscientific.com, correct?
Yeah.
People can get to you that way, send you emails. What about your works, the books, Where God Lives, Closer to the Light, Transformed by the Light?
George,
where do you get
I am
those?
So blessed that they're still in print.
Great.
Amazon.
Amazon's one of the best.
Yeah.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come right back. We're going to take final phone calls with Dr. Melvin Morse, and then I'll tell you a little bit about what's in store for tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Patrick Heron joins us. We talk about his work about the return of the Antichrist and the Nephilim. Should be a fascinating show. When we come right back, we'll take final phone calls with Dr. Melvin Morris on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Dr. Melvin Morris with us. We're going to take your calls. Melvin, tell us a little bit about this IRVA conference again.
Okay, this is the conference. IRVA... Military remote viewers, these are the guys who really can do it. I mean, not the sort of haphazard, spontaneous images that come to the mind, but that they can actually see a suitcase bomb in another city, and they can actually use their mind to disarm it. And lest that sounds surprising to people, how many people who are listening to this radio show have noticed the phenomena that when they're around a computer, suddenly it'll stop working or it'll short out or something like that? We've all seen that. When we studied children that had near-death experiences, over 50% of them as an adult had psychical effects on computer equipment. So it's not much of a stretch to realize that the military remote viewers can do this sort of thing. You know, they're just using their mind right. to interact with that sensitive, you know, they're not actually mechanically moving, you know, a piece, but they're interacting with that sensitive equipment. Okay, well, these guys, they have only been focused on this whole issue of, you know, what they're doing in the military. And they're insulated from the rest of the world. They don't have the problems that I have. Nobody's laughing at them. They've got unlimited funds. They can spend all the time they want, you know, just perfecting this technology. Well, finally, they're reaching out and understanding the spiritual implications of this. So you have Roger Nelson of the Global Consciousness Project. You've got guys, you know, giving lectures on what mediums and, you know, and controlled remote viewers have in common. You have Russell Targ talking about his daughter, who was a great spiritual healer, and how you have to protect yourself spiritually when you're remote accessing another body and trying to heal something in it. I mean, you know, so for the first time, they're actually showing us how this kind of information can impact our lives. And this is not, you know, I went to a conference just over the weekend, some Hawaiian healer, you know, talking about energy healing and all this stuff. And it was a whole day of crap. I mean, if I can say that, right, you know, I mean, it really was. It was just, you know, it was just a bunch of philosophy and people laying on the hands and then everybody talking about how it made them feel. Well, you know, come on, we can do better than that. We've got to do better than that. And for the first time that I'm aware of, they're actually saying, hey, we know how to really do it, and now we're going to let you people in the civilian world know. We're going to be presenting our research on how you can remote view a virus in a plant, and there's not much difference, you know, between remote viewing a virus in a plant and a human being, and then think of the practical implications of that. We're going to be presenting our research on the parallels between controlled remote viewing and near-death experiences, and it's an amazing opportunity. It's one of the most interesting conferences that will be around for years. This won't happen again, that's for sure.
Should be pretty good.
I'm sort of amazed that it's happening at all.
West of the Rockies, Salem, Oregon. Go ahead, Don.
I was wondering about intuition. I don't know. I can see stuff coming a mile away. Friends, family, neighbors, the whole nine yards. And then people, you know, they don't go, how do you know that? But it happens.
Right.
And, you know, I don't understand how it happens, but, you know, you're the expert on this. And the other thing is, everybody wish Tom to get feeling better, and I'll jump off and let somebody else on. Thanks, George.
Okay.
So intuition, just another non-local perception. Intuition is just that direct spiritual or, you know, insight from another reality. Hey, guess who has no trouble with intuition? It's people like policemen. We did a 20-year study of law enforcement officers, and they don't have this whole wow phenomenon about it. The typical law enforcement officer, when we ask them to describe an intuitive experience, will say something like, I floated out of my physical body, I looked down, and I saw that the suspect had a weapon hidden in the back of his trousers, and so I immediately acted to save my life.
That is,
you know, because know it's real because it's saving their life.
Something kicks in.
Yeah. So, but the rest of us are sitting there floundering. We don't trust our intuition because it's not that important to us. Well, it's our lives. It is important. And people's got to start learning to trust their intuition. And there's no different. To me, that's just another, you know, it's all interconnected. You know, intuition, spiritual visions, near-death experiences, you know.
We should add deja vu to that, too.
Deja vu, absolutely. That's another non-local perception. That's, you know, that accessing that timeless reality. And then, of course, it seems odd to us because suddenly it's out of time after we've accessed the information.
Let's go to Hollywood, Florida now on the wild card line. Linnea, hi there. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes, this is Linnea. I have a question that as soon as the show opened and the initial thing, one of the initial stories you said, Melvin, was about the little girl that had...
she was under for 18 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
And she talked about the nurse's cat that died.
Yes.
I've always been fascinated about what happens to animals after they die. I mean, what did this little girl say about this cat?
Well, she didn't say anything about the cat. She just overheard a nurse talking about it. But we, you know, there's no doubt that animals have the same experience. I mean, we've heard this too much, and we've heard too many kinds of, you know, I really don't have time to go into it all. You know, my wife has a blog on the website Spiritual Scientific, and she talks a lot about animals and animal heaven in her blog. And I think I would just go to her blog. Her name's Pauline.
Of everything that you've studied with regards to this near-death experiences with children, what has fascinated you the most, Melvin?
What fascinates me the most is that this information is available to all of us at all times, and we seem to totally overlook it. And we don't have to wait until we die to have this experience of interacting with spiritual realities and a God, for lack of a better word, that, you know, I don't really believe in, I guess. But, you know, it's just we can access this information in our ordinary lives by paying attention. So it fascinates to me how easy it is. And I had a good friend, his name is Pierre Jovanovich, and he was the one that dodged a sniper bullet I was telling you about before.
Yeah.
And he said that for people who don't believe in angels, spend 30 days carefully documenting everything that's happening in your ordinary life, and you will see an angel. And I don't know of too many people that have taken that challenge and haven't seen an angel. Certainly I can tell you I have. You know, what people call an angel, whatever that is. But you have to pay attention. And so, you know, I'm not fascinated that this stuff is miraculous and wow. I'm fascinated how ordinary and mundane it is. The miraculous is mundane. It's ordinary.
I haven't seen an angel, Melvin, but I'm sure I've been helped by them a number of times.
Have you spent 30 days really paying attention?
No. Absolutely
yeah.
not.
I mean, you know, see, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to, you know, to understand these spiritual realities. And when you think about it, the lesson we learn from children who have near-death experiences is that we're supposed to be learning lessons of love during this life. So, in other words, we're supposed to be having problems with ex-wives and getting angry at people and all this kind of stuff. You know, that it's in those kinds of struggles that we learn the lessons of love that we need to know as human beings. And intuition is just one form of understanding reality. We need analysis. We need, you know, because you can't learn if you don't have analysis. But then we also have to understand we can all access, you know, what they call intuition. Hey, we taught remote viewing to this engineering. She was a woman engineer, and at the end of it, she said, "You guys have just validated my entire career," because she had always been laughed at and trivialized for having intuition. And so then she became excessively and overly, you know, she wanted to be more analytic than everybody else. And then suddenly she understood there has to be a balance. And, you know, and so there's this is, to me, controlled remote viewing is the practical aspect of the near-death experience. It's the practical side of it.
Okay, let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Michael. Take it away.
Hello, hello. I'll make this quick because I just joined podcast today, and it is fantastic. You should get everybody to do it. It is amazing. Thank you. It's a great show. And I'm, before I say this, Dr. Morris, I'm not trying to contradict you at all. I love what you're doing, and I love your outlook in this.
Contradict me. I want to be contradicted.
Well,
that's the only way we're going to learn.
Okay, I'm glad you – I'm not contradicting. This is another step. When George asked you about if you any of the children experienced hell or experienced demons or whatever, and you said it's never happened, well, we wouldn't
in my experience.
It to happen because the Bible's pretty clear that if a child dies, they're going to go to heaven. They're not going to go to hell. That's not even an option. So that they haven't experienced it doesn't eradicate that possibility. There's another doctor. He's a Christian doctor, Dr. Maurice Rawlins, who
yes.
research on it. I'm familiar with it. He did.
I know Maurice Rawlins for years.
Cool.
yeah, he's very – I agree. Yeah.
Talk with him. He did the hell and back, and what he found out is that many adults do have that experience and do experience a hell.
Okay. Now – sure. Maurice Rawlins is, to me, the premier researcher, a super cardiologist. But you got to remember that he did his research in Tennessee in the heart of the Bible Belt. So all of his patients are kind of predisposed to actually understand. You know, to believe in a hell. So, you know, but my mind is open to what you're saying, because if people will read Maurice's book, he did not believe in hell himself. In fact, he had a patient that had a near-death experience who was dying on the table, and his nurses told him, they said, you got to pray for this guy. And he said, well, I don't believe in God. And they said, well, just make up a prayer. And Maurice describes how that made-up prayer boomeranged and made him believe in a God. And I agree with you. His work is very excellent, and it does definitely document a hell. But I'm just adding the caveat that he, you know, studied people who actually do believe. You know, so it still is an open question: how much is it our belief, and how much is really happening?
Melvin, there's something very special about the children. Do you think that they are given a gift?
Absolutely. They see with perfect. Because they don't have a filter on it. I understand what the caller is saying, and maybe I'm open to the, you know, I mean, we don't know. You know, we have so many filters as adults, we just don't know. But when we studied children, we studied a total of 26 children who survived 20 cardiac arrest, and 25 of them remembered their near-death experience and described it in detail. When you look at the adult literature, only about 7 to 10% of adults remember their near-death experience. And I believe that's because they have so many filters and so many belief systems that, you know, they've screened out the most experience, you know, important experience of their lives. Whereas children just have that simple honesty. They just tell you, wow, I was floating out of my body, and I saw the sun. And it had a lot of good things in it for me. You know, just like that.
Okay, Manhattan, we go. New York, Andrew, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you.
Good.
My question is actually, you've been talking about the left and the right brain. My question is actually with the center of the brain, with the pineal gland. I've heard that near-death experiences and actually during dreaming that this gland will... basically a chemical, DMT will release this chemical that actually perpetuates you into dreaming or an experience.
I think so. You're right. And it also releases melatonin, doesn't it, Melvin?
Absolutely. But I think that, you know, this is left over from older physiological and neurophysiological thinking. When I talk with the scientists down in Brazil, where, you know, I think the cutting edge of consciousness research is happening, they don't really feel that the pineal gland is all that involved anymore. You know, that's, you know, left over from a couple of hundred years ago. And we've got to just keep updating. We got to keep understanding. We got to keep willing to, you know, to discard what may not be appropriate anymore. And I don't think that the pineal gland is all that involved in spiritual events as we once thought, perhaps 50 years ago.
I know people are taking melatonin supplements, though, and some of them report very bizarre dreams.
No kidding. That's interesting. Because, yeah. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends melatonin for, you know, to help even, you know, even five-year-olds fall asleep.
Yeah,
that, I think that would be very interesting to understand, you know, that goes back to an earlier caller's comment on, you know, that sort of, you know, what happens when we sleep. Lucid dreams, the hypnagogic state, seems to also access this non-local reality.
Okay, we'll go to Duncan, South Carolina, east of the Rockies. It's James. Hey, James.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Mel.
Hi.
I had a near-death experience in a car accident. I should have died, and I walked away with a bump on my head. And ever since then, I've been having these dreams that come true. Would that be remote viewing or precognition?
Yeah. And a very, very, you know, that's a well-documented phenomena, you know, and of course, you know, why not?
Sometimes that happens. A bump on the head does something very strange to you, doesn't it?
I have no doubt that if we imaged your brain, we would find increased electrical activity in the right temporal lobe. I've studied probably 20 patients who have what they call right temporal lobe seizures or increased activity, electrical activity in the right temporal lobe, and they have verifiable dreams that come true. We have them keep journals, you know, for week after week after week, so we don't have that, you know, that effect, you know, where you discard the stuff that you don't remember, and when it does come true, then you say, aha. Now, we had patients basically kept the journals for a year, and we showed that patients with right temporal lobe seizures or events, in fact, had dreams that came true.
What was that case of that woman where she had literally half a brain in her head?
And
she still functioned.
Oh, absolutely. When I was a medical student, I worked with the great Dr. Mountcastle, who removed half of people's brains. And that, you know, that's one of the dramatic proofs of this top-down causation. And top-down causation meaning that the mind comes first and then expresses itself in a brain to perceive this reality. Think about it. When I was a medical student at Johns Hopkins, I took care of many patients that half of their brain was removed, and yet they had very, very little effect from it. And
this whole
evening, the mind just created other neural networks in order to function.
This has been fascinating. Melvin, thank you so much. Appreciate you being on the program. It's been 5 years. We got to keep that a little closer next time. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.